So I will try to cover my vision for the Eleni release. I hope to get more people involved in this work, and that's why I'm here. There is quite a lot of work already done. I've been working on it for the last 2.5 years, I think. But it's pretty close to being ready for everyday use now, and I hope to be able to convince you that this is true. So the problem I'm going to attract, and first, a little word about me. I am one of the system, or the maintainers of the SysV System 5 init packet in Debian, which is the boot system in Debian. And I must admit that makes me a bit careful when I modify the packages. I know that when I do mistakes in the boot system, I might break 100,000 machines. So you do get a bit careful when you do that. And I've tried to be in this careful when redesigning the boot sequence system as well. And I hope to convince you that this is actually true. So the problem with, or I'll first go through the outline of my talk. I'll do a quick overview of the boot system, how it actually works. I'll describe the ordering problem, and I'll propose a solution for it. I'll also explain where I'm at with converting Debian to this new system at the moment, and explain what is left to do. Also explain how to actually implement this in your packet. So first of all, the Debian boot system is rather complex, but it's you can be break it down into several stages. And the first stage I'm not going to cover at all. It's the initrd stage, which is running the kernel with a RAM file system with scripts to do the things that are required to get the hard disk operational. And then it moves on from there. I'm going to talk about the next step, which is the sysv init scripts, the init scripts packet, and all the things that are going on after the initrd is done. And the first thing that happens is that sbin init starts and looks at init tab to decide what to do. An init tab contains a list of terminals to attach a Getty process to, and the thing I'm interested in that in this talk, it also starts a sequence of scripts. And all the scripts are in the etc rc something.d directories. The first thing that is started is the scripts in the rcs.d directory, which is a rather confusing term because it's not the single user run level. The single user run level do not have any scripts. But I'll only mention that in briefing, it's one of the bugs in the Debian boot system that is we'll just have to live with it. It's too late to change it, I think. In SUSE, they call it the rcboot.d, which is more accurate describing what it is. The script in the rcs.d directory is only run once at boot, and it's supposed to bring up the system to a state where you can start running other scripts. And the very early boot sequence has two obvious synchronization points. You have like when the root file system is available and writable, and when all the file systems are available and writable. Before the root file system is writable, there is very little you can do. You can't, for example, store PID files. You can't use files in USR, slash USR, for example. So the very early boot, that's a system you have to be very careful with. If you mess it up, you will end up with a non-bootable system. After the rcs.d scripts are executed, the rc normally .2.d for machines with the default setup of booting to the or to run level 2. These scripts will all have the file systems mounted because they were done previously. And the rcdo.2.d directory is a real run level. You can switch to and from run levels, and it can be re-executed. So that's like a proper name for a run level. One thing to note is that there's an optimization in the boot sequence system that will not start scripts that was started on the previous run level and not stop script that was not started on the previous run level. This is just an optimization, but it's important to know when you are putting scripts in the boot system that it might not be run if it was if the system is switching run levels. And as you probably can imagine, the ordering of these scripts are very important. As I said, the run level one is the real single user run level, but it's not really. I'll just mention it because addressing it is a bigger problem that I'm not going to address in this talk. But the point is that you can switch to and from run level one. You cannot switch to and from the single user run level and expecting anything to happen. So if you want to stop daemons to be able to maintain the system, you should go to run level one. You should not go to run level S. And as you can see at the end of the slide, there is a problem with the Linux kernel that we have to address sooner or later. It's becoming event-based. And the System 5 boot system was designed to be sequential and deterministic. And the Linux kernel is no longer deterministic in the early boot system. When kernel modules are loaded, events are passed on to UDEV that will create devices that will make it possible to do more stuff. And like network interfaces might not show up when you need them in the sequential boot. But that will have to wait for another talk. Okay, so that's the basic booting in a Debian system. When the rcs.d scripts are executed, the login prompts show up in the terminals, and KDM, XDM, GDM show up with a login prompt in the graphical environment if it's enabled. So that's like the end of the boot. And when you are in one run level, and run level is just a magic number, or just a number in sysvinit specifying a expected state of the machine. And you can switch run levels if you have several different states defined by the run levels. Normally, in Debian, run levels 2 to 5 are identical, but they don't have to be. And run level 1 is the pseudo single-user run level, which is nice to switch to if you want to do maintenance. Run levels 0 and 6 are halt and shutdown. Doing a shutdown is actually switching to run level 0 or 6. So to switch a run level, you do telinit and x. And that's the confusing s again, because it's not switching to like the scripts in rcs.d. It's switching to single user, which is only presenting a login prompt. So it doesn't run any scripts. But if you switch to run level 1, it will first stop all the or run the scripts to stop services that are listed in the script you want to arrive in. So if you have a lot of stop scripts in rc1.d, you switch to run level 1, it will run the stop scripts first. Next, it will run the start scripts. And then when it's done, it will actually switch to the single user run level, which will present a login prompt. So the single user, or the run level 1 and single user feature is a bit confusing. It's a bit easier when you look at the halt and shutdown run levels. The point I have with this slide is that the stop scripts are executed with the stop argument, and the start script are executed with the start argument. And that's like almost how it works. Because of a missed feature, bad design, whatever, in the early 90s, all the run level scripts in rc0.d and rc6.d are not executed with start for the start scripts and stop for the stop scripts. All of them have the stop argument. So they pretend to be start script, but they're actually stop scripts. And that's something you have to take into account when you organize the boot system. So shutting down. I guess I've already covered it. You just switch to the run level, run the scripts, and the last script in the run level will either turn off the machine or reboot it, depending on the run level. That's like the background for for changing the boot script ordering. And the ordering problem is picking the right number isn't too easy. because the directory are filled with symlinks to the etc init initd script, or the initd scripts, and they have the symlinks have names to reflect their ordering, and the order is just a number between 01 and 99, and picking the right number is, in the complex case, very hard. Sometimes it involves modifying a lot of packages if you have to get in between two packages with the same number, for example. And the current Debian default is wrong. You normally want to start scripts in one order and stop them in the opposite order. That doesn't happen in Debian. They are started and stopped in the same order. Also, if you change the start sequence number, you want to have the 100 minus the start sequence number as a stop sequence number to make sure the ordering during shutdown is correct. It's not. And changing it will be, changing it one by one will be close to impossible, because you have to like start at one end of the sequence and renumber everything. And that's modifying 840 packages one by one and making sure you get the right sequence of changes into the Debian archive. And upgrading will be close to impossible. So, to give an example of the ordering problem, given two packages, script A and script B, and they all use the default, which is sequence 20. And then you want a new packet that needs to run after script B, but before script A. And that would normally, with the current Debian system, involve changing at least two packages. You have to change the ordering of the script you want to run before to get a number after you, and you have to change your own packet to get a number after the packet you want to run after. And as you can see here, I document you will have to move script A to sequence number 22, for example, and stop script 18, and leave or pick 21 for the sequence as a sequence number for script C. And of course, if something depends on script A, they would have to move to sequence number 33. And if something depends on those packages, they would have to move to 24. And so on, the changes cascades into packages that are unrelated to the change you you really want to do. And the only way to discover when the ordering is wrong is by using a lot of testing. And sometimes you have to test with a specific configuration of packages. And there is no way to know upfront which packages will depend on your packet unless you actually document the dependencies. And that's the focus on this talk. I want to get dependencies into the scripts in Debian so we can actually check the ordering and make sure it's correct. And next step, we can actually do the ordering using these dependencies, making sure it stays correct. So that's basically the framework of of my proposed solution. Document the dependencies. State that script A depends on nothing. Script B depends on nothing. Script C depends on script B. And want to run before script A. And then you generate a sequence, and everything is working out of the box. And if all the other packages have their dependencies documented as well, the numbering will cascade and the ordering will be correct. And I looked at quite a few of the different solutions. For example, FreeBSD has a dependency ordering system for their boot system. Gentoo has it. SUSE has it. Don't think Red Hat has it. And also, there is alternatives in Debian. The MInit system, I think, is using dependencies in Debian. But I decided to go with the Linux software base solution. And that's the same solution that is implemented in SUSE. So I just picked the SUSE packet and ported it to Debian. So given the dependency information, you can actually now check the ordering of your system. If you install the inserve packet and you do a check init d order, you will get a message if the ordering is incorrect or not according to the dependency headers that are listed in the scripts. And you can even graph the dependencies and see if the stated dependencies looks correct. And I'll try to flip over and have a look at that. Where is it? No. Where is it? No. And this is the dependencies from yesterday's unstable. Here you can see that the glibc script has to run first, then the mount script for the kernel.fs, which is like /proc and /sys and stuff like that. And it can run in parallel with UDEB, according to this. UDEB is not installed in my SID change root, so it's... Right. Do we have any useful pointing device? Can you see my mouse pointer? Fascinating. I should be well prepared. So here we are. That's the very early boot. I can't explain what all of these scripts are doing, but I'll keep it short. Glibc checks that the glibc version is new enough to actually work. Then you mount proc, sys, and other kernel file systems. This will actually use the information and store stuff in proc. This will mount a file system that is mounted under /dev. Assuming that UDEV was running, it will run between the kernel file systems and this one to make sure that /dev is mounted. Setting the host name, starting bootlog daemon, setting the hardware the system clock from the hardware clock, checking the file system on /, and mounting it to read/write if it's okay. This one is setting the hardware clock. It's seem a bit early. Hmm? Yeah, it is. It will. Yeah, this one actually should have a dependency on this one earlier, but no, it doesn't matter because normally earlier hardware clock would need a mounted USR to get the time zone data, but no, the time zone data is copied into etc to be able to run hardware clock earlier. So this one is populating the etc mtab file with the file system that was mounted up here to make sure that the mtab file is updated and correct. This one would load some modules, I think. This one will check all the non-root file systems and see if they are OK. This one will mount them. This one will prepare the, well, actually, it would remove the old files from ifapdown. This one will remove old files in /temp and a few other things. This one will make a workaround if /temp is too small. Let's see. And here we are getting to the more interesting pieces. This is a sequence point. Localfs means that all the local file systems are guaranteed to be mounted, which is / and var at the moment. Then we enable networking. We seed the random device. This is a sequence point, meaning that network is up. This is a sequence point, meaning that local time has been set. Then we start syslog daemon. We would have started the name daemon. I'm not sure. Not quite sure what that is. This is the point where it would mount NFS directories and other network mount points. This is the point where you are guaranteed that USR is available. This will clean up a few things related to that. And then you have the sequence point, which is all the remote file systems are available, which in Debian means that /usr is guaranteed to be available. This one will feed syslogd with kernel messages. This is a sequence point, meaning that syslog daemon is operational. Then you have cron, bootmisc. Well, this one will remove the no login file to make sure you can actually log in. This one will stop the bootlog daemon in single user mode, and this one will stop bootlogd in other run levels. So that's like the dependency graph of a simple SID change route. And using this dependency graph, you can spot errors quite easily. If you, of course, know what it's supposed to be. So, and that's very useful for debugging dependency headers. So to activate this, I've taken the inserve packet from SUSE and made it possible to run in Debian. There's a debconf question which is low priority, so it will not show up unless you do a reconfigure on the inserve packet. When you enable it, it will first check your system and see if it's safe to enable it. And if it is safe, it will convert all start symlinks in RC0 and RC6 to stop symlinks to make them reflect the way they are really going to be called instead of pretending to be start scripts that will behave like stop scripts. And then it replaces the update RCD command, which is the command called by all Debian packages to hook into the boot system, with a wrapper that is calling inserve and make sure that the dependency-based sequence is maintained. And finally, it reorders all the symlinks in RCD using the dependencies that are stated in the scripts.
Does this mean that it's backwards compatible with existing boot scripts?
Yeah. Well, I don't mean, what do you mean by backwards compatible? Well, you should add the dependencies to the scripts. But if you don't, they will behave like the defaults in Debian. So it will probably work. Unless you are in the RCS directory, it will definitely work. As I said, they will check if it's safe to convert the system to use the dependency-based system, and it will make sure you don't have obsolete initd scripts. And the reason I check for obsolete initd script is that if the script is obsolete, it means it's removed from the packet it used to be part of. And you can't fix a removed script in a packet. There's no way to put headers in it, because it doesn't exist in the packet anymore. So you have to remove it from the system before you can convert. Or, of course, you can add headers to it, but it will still refuse to convert, because it's actually looking for obsolete scripts, not scripts without headers. It looks for loops. If you have a dependency loop, there is no way to actually create a correct ordering, so it will refuse to enable. It will also refuse to enable if there are duplicates provides, and provides is like a string that script specify that the others can use for dependencies. Duplicate provides is making it harder to order, but I'm not quite sure if that should be a hard requirement to not have duplicated provides. But at the moment, it will not install packages implementing duplicate provides. That will, I'll talk a bit later about that problem. So this is a test run to enable it. Install inserve, reconfigure. If you say yes, it will check if it's safe, back up the current boot sequence, and reorder and divert. And then we're going to have a look at the sequence changes. I think this will work. Yeah. Is this readable? Okay, there is a script that was provided by Franz Popp to check, to compare the old boot sequence with the new boot sequence and report any ordering changes. And this is displaying the changes that was done in my SID change route when I converted it. And all big changes should be reviewed to make sure that the change is correct. For example, you can see here that procps, which is the script that will load /proc with values from etc, is moved 8 steps ahead in the boot sequence. It used to start a lot later. But that's actually a correct position for it, because it only depends on /proc being mounted. And it's now being executed just after proc is mounted, and not way later in the boot system. But it's a wise thing to have a look at the new sequence if you are unsure that the dependencies are correct. You should also, of course, check the dependency graph. So after the switch, there will be a few new properties to the packet system. And update RCD is the script that is called by packet maintainer script when you install a packet to register the initrd script. And it will refuse to install a packet that have a script that will introduce a loop in the dependencies for the boot scripts. This is a safeguard to make sure that you don't mess up the boot sequence by installing a packet with broken headers. It will refuse you to install that packet. It will not allow you to install the packet and get a broken boot sequence. It also requires that scripts are installed in dependency order. And this is a new requirement for the maintainer scripts. If you have several init scripts in your packet, you have to install them in dependency order, because otherwise the packet will not install. And this was a problem with the basic init scripts packet, installing 27 scripts, I think, in alphabetic order, which is not dependency-based order. So I had to reorder all of them to make sure that they are inserted in the right order. And one thing to be aware of is that incorrect dependencies will give the wrong ordering. But it will be the same ordering all the time, so it will not change. So you can, it's a predictable boot ordering, but if you get the wrong ordering, for example, if your CryptFS script do not depend on LVM but are using encrypted devices on LVM, your boot will not succeed. So make sure the dependencies are correct. And one thing I wanted to mention is that I now have the test suite available in the insert packet. So every time I do a new upload of the insert packet, it's testing that the expected, well, the normal Debian scripts and a few test cases, a few bugs I've discovered will not be present in the new packet that I upload. It is actually impossible to build a packet if those tests fail. And when I started the reordering project, I hoped to get a faster boot and a faster shutdown by running things in parallel. Just reordering benchmarks have proved will actually speed up the boot and shutdown. I'm not quite sure why. Running in parallel doesn't really speed up that much, but I guess that depends on your hardware. If you have one CPU and a slow one, it doesn't help much. I hope it will help with multiple CPUs. I haven't benchmarked that. But it is possible if you enable dependency-based boot to run things in parallel. And one of the things that makes it easier to test this is that it's possible to go back. You don't have to burn your bridges and pray that everything will work out. You can actually disable dependency-based boot by running reconfigure and saying no. But you should do it quickly. If you change your mind, it's guaranteed to work if you haven't installed any new packages. It will most often work if you have installed new packages, but there are no guarantees, because it's looping over all the packages with init scripts and run their postinst script again to get them to call update RCD to register the init script again with the old boot system. And not all postinst scripts behave as you should. As you should expect when you rerun them. So, the Linux software base headers consist of three sets of information. It's the provide header, which is a string, and you should not use a virtual facility, I'll come back to that. The run level entries, listing the run levels it should start and stop on, and dependency entries, where there are three different classes of dependencies. You have the hard dependencies, and the soft dependencies, and the soft reverse dependencies, which is, well, the hard dependencies are required to start and stop, and the soft dependencies are should start and stop, and the reverse one is X start before and stop after. And the X ones are not in the LSB. Those are defined by SUSE and Debian for reverse dependencies. And the difference between hard dependencies and soft dependencies is that if the soft dependencies are missing, your packet will not fail to install. If the hard dependencies are missing, your packet will fail to install. of course, if they are present. If the dependencies are present, the ordering has to work, and if you have a loop, it will fail to install anyway. So it's not like pretend to get this ordering, and if it doesn't work, just ignore it, which some maintainers seem to believe. If the packet is there, if your dependency is there, it has to have it has to be possible to run it before your script. It's not soft in the way that it can be broken if it doesn't work out. Loops will still be fatal. And for those using a default setting with their packet, and that's the majority of packages, there is 866 packages with init scripts in Debian at the moment, and the majority can just use this header. It will make sure it will be installed after USR is mounted and after syslogd has started. It will start on run levels 2, 3, 4, and 5, and it will stop on 0, 1, and 6. Of course, the virtual facilities, that's like sequence points in the boot. Those should be used over specific dependencies because they allow us for more flexibility in rewriting the ordering. So localfs is when slash and slash var is available, network available, port mapper, not much used anymore, remote file systems, time, syslog, and namd. That's the virtual facilities that are defined in the Linux software base. And unless we get good reasons otherwise, we should stick with those and not introduce new virtual facilities. And those are defined in the inserve packet and can also be defined, as far as I can see from the code at least, I haven't tested it, by each individual packet in the conf.d directory. So, dependencies. Getting them right is important, and what should we list in them? Normally, the start and stop dependencies are the same, and they can be in the same order. I saw someone trying to specify the reverse order on the stop dependencies. The ordering on the header, or in the header, doesn't matter. They are dependencies no matter what ordering they have in the header. Prefer virtual dependencies, and make sure that the string you depend on is identical to the provides of the script you are depending on. And be very careful with the rcs.d scripts. Messing those up will probably break your machine. So if you are in doubt, you can talk to me on IRC or send an email or ask. Luckily, there are not that many. I think it's like 50, less than 50 packages with scripts in rcs.d compared to the 866 scripts in Debian in, in total. And as slash /usr are mounted in the rcs.d directory, if you don't stop, if you don't start in rcs.d, you should always depend on remotefs. I hope to be able to move the mounting of remote file systems to one of the real run levels, so we can have a single user that will unmount them. And for that to work, all the script that needs slash /usr mounted when running remote file systems will have to declare that dependency. Because slash /user is allowed to be on a remote file system in Debian. Well, yeah. It's defined by also by the Debian policy, I think. So that's just the way it is. It will also mount the rest of the NFS directories. So it is like all the remote file systems that it can mount will be mounted at that point. But slash /usr on a remote file system is the reason we have to take special care about this in the boot sequence. And if the script has the wrong dependencies, you as a system administrator can provide overrides in etc inserve overrides and the script name. You just put in a replacement header there, and it will be used instead of the one provided by the script. And the inserve packet provides override files that will be used if the scripts themselves are missing headers. So while we are converting the Debian systems to use dependency-based sequencing, we can get it working even if we don't have all the packages converted yet. One thing I haven't had time to look at, I've focused on reporting bugs and fixing packages, is how to handle alternatives. We have to find a way, for example, to have multiple syslogd or syslog daemons in Debian, providing the same virtual facility and be able to switch between them without breaking installations. As multiple provides will break the packet installation, you cannot have multiple packages implementing the same facility. So only the syslogd script can provide syslogd. And I've seen some packages implementing the $ syslog virtual facility or providing it in their header, and it doesn't work. And I've also seen some scripts providing the MTA keyword, which is like the mail transfer agent. And if you have two scripts like that, you can't convert. And if you have one script, like I can try to install a packet with the same keyword, the new packet will not install. So do not use the same facility name in your provides header. So short summary of the status in Debian. 76% of the packages got LSB headers at the moment. I've reported that's approximately 200 packages. I've reported about around 85, 90 packages that are not solved yet. I think I reported like 300 bugs total. So a lot of them are solved. And with the projected solving speed in Debian, we will have all packages fixed in July. We could have it quicker if everyone uploaded headers into their packages. So, and there is a need for better documentation to explain to maintainers how to organize, how to document their dependencies. And there is also a need to update the policy to reflect dependency-based sequencing. There is also a few bugs, well, actually two bugs left in InServe. One requires a redesign, and the others it's not that serious, but I hope to have it fixed really soon now. So if you're interested in tracking the status of this, you can fetch the source from CVN and run the missing overrides or missing by popcon. I'll give you a view of the current status from this morning. 139 packages are, no, 139 scripts are not documented with dependency headers in Debian. And I'm talking about SID here. 93 got overrides or BTS reports and no LSB header, so that's packages that should be fixed. They probably have a bug in BTS waiting for the maintainer to address it. And then a few overrides that can probably be removed when the package is fixed in testing. And then we have my working list. This is the list of packages missing headers in Debian SID. Sorted by popularity contest installations. So the most popular packet that hasn't got a header yet is Anacron. The next one is Spam Assassin, Netatalk, Smartmon Tools, blah, blah, blah. And there is, as you probably imagine, 200 packages listed here. I try to report the BTS bugs by priority. So I'm gotten down to all packages with more than 159 installations reported by to popularity contest have been reported to the BTS. I really need help with this. It's 150 packages left to handle, and it takes 15 minutes to handle each packet. So it's a lot of man hours left before all of them have been reported to BTS. There is also a wiki page documenting how to generate or how to write headers and documenting the current status of all dependency-based boot. So I really hope I can get volunteers to help me with getting this feature ready for Lenny. Any questions?
How does file parsing fit into the picture?
It's probably possible to rewrite file RC to use dependency-based sequencing. I was talking with the maintainer of it half a year ago, I think, but no one has done any work implementing it. The insert packet actually generates a list which is pretty easy to convert to the FileRC sequence file, because it is like the list of dependencies of all packages or all scripts in the boot system. Yeah, so it's possible, but not done yet. Any other questions? Yeah.
How about instead of changing all the symlinks in the RC member.d directories, having some generated file list which is already generated, and change RC, the RC scripts, to start and stop basic on a generated file, the graph of starting?
That is possible. I decided against it because I want to. I don't want the ordering to be dynamically calculated during boot.
I mean, you after running insert, you update this file, but simply not changing all the symlinks. So keep that to the packages that install them. But as a kind of override, you don't look at the symlinks over there, but simply really use the file, which is probably somewhat like the file RC layout.
I think it's better to solve it there. It would be identical to file RC. So better fix file RC, and if those that want that system can use file RC.
Okay.
We don't need another file RC, I think.
No, but the whole point was of preventing insert to change symlinks in the direction.
Other questions? That's one.
How does this fit in with system administrators who write custom in the D scripts? Or change symlinks manually inside the RC extra directories.
Right. How does it fit with system administrators doing?
System administrator. Just put in the script, make a few symlinks. You can be reasonably sure that everything stays the same.
Yes. Existing scripts that are not in Debian packages will get the default settings, which is remotefs and syslogd dependencies, and start in 2345, stop in 016. Those without headers will get that. Changing symlinks, changing ordering of the symlinks will be overrided when you update the sequence based on dependencies. So a system administrator that wants to change the ordering has to change the dependencies. A system administrator that wants to stop a script from running in one run level can just remove that script, and it will stay removed. At least that's the intention. One of the bugs is that the stop symlinks will be put back in place. But I consider that a bug. I will make sure it's fixed. But if you remove a start symlink, it will stay removed. It will not be reintroduced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last question, please.
Okay. For system administrator writing custom scripts, can they add the headers themselves?
Yep.
So that gets taken into account?
They can add their header themselves in their own script, or they can provide overrides in the etc inserve overrides directory for scripts that are in other packages. So for system administrators that want to change the ordering, they can do that without modifying the packet files. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks,
Peter. Thank you.